News Talk 94.9 WSJM. You're listening to Our Take. Thanks for tuning in to this Tuesday edition of the program. This is, of course, the show where we have longer conversations about things you may have heard about recently on WSJM News. If it's appeared in our news coverage, it will show up on Our Take. In a more extended fashion, we have longer conversations with individuals who are in the know or making things happen here in Michigan's great Southwest. And we have several guests lined up for today's program, multiple things to talk about. First of all, next segment, we'll hear from Governor Rick Snyder. Our own Michael Arney had a chance to chat with Governor Snyder about his Marshall Plan for the state of Michigan. We heard about this on yesterday's Our Take. The governor has announced this ambitious program to increase skilled trades training opportunities here in Michigan. And this will be the main focus of his final 9 months or so in office. We'll learn about that on today's show by hearing Michael Arney's discussion with Governor Rick Snyder about that very topic. We'll also find out what St. Joseph City Commissioners did last night. We'll hear about a few things that they approved at last night's regular session. We'll also hear from the manager of the River Valley Senior Center. They recently got word that they're going to receive a large grant from the Pokagon Fund. We'll find out about that on today's program. And we will also talk with Jim Ashbrook about a program being offered as part of the Senior PGA Championship this year. Everyone has a chance to sponsor an American flag that will be on display for the Senior PGA when that happens at Harbor Shores in May. We'll learn about that program, how everyone can get in on the action, and how it will benefit, lest we forget, here in Michigan's great Southwest. If you'd like to weigh in on something we discussed, just send us an email. The address is ourtake@wsjm.com. That's O-U-R-T-A-K-E at wsjm.com. News Talk 94.9 WSJM. Time for a quick break. When we come back, we'll hear from Governor Rick Snyder. Stick around. We'll be right back. News Talk 94.9 WSJM. You're listening to Our Take. This is the Tuesday edition of the program. I'm your host today. My name is Andrew Green. Glad to be with you for the show. Right now for this segment of the show, I thought we would hear from Governor Rick Snyder. He recently announced a program, a plan. He's calling it his Marshall Plan for Michigan. This is the governor's effort to increase opportunities for workers and students around the state to receive skilled trades training in order to prepare for the economy of both today and tomorrow. And our own Michael Arney had a conversation with Governor Snyder about his Marshall Plan. It's the main focus of his administration for the next several months as he prepares to leave office. So let's hear what Governor Rick Snyder had to tell WSJM's own Michael Arney.
Speaking with Governor Rick Snyder, and Governor, if you could start off by briefly describing the Marshall Plan for Talent, which you first unveiled in an appearance in South Haven.
Yeah, the Marshall Plan for Talent's an outstanding opportunity to do even more than what we've been doing because we have a huge demand out there for good, well-paying jobs. And we need more courses. We need more instructors and teachers in these programs. We need to ramp up. We should be proud of how many jobs we've seen created in Michigan in the last few years. We've done good apprenticeship models. But I looked out in the future. We did a lot of analysis showing that we were still going to have unmet demand for great, well-paying jobs that are $1,000. And our educational system isn't quite geared to deal with that today. So how do we adjust things? How do we get the private sector working more with K-12 and our higher ed people? How do we all work together to really get people into outstanding careers that you can get these jobs after a 1 or 2 year certificate program?
And that's a great idea. What's the feedback been so far over the last few weeks?
Well, the feedback's generally been very good because if you think about it, what an outstanding outcome. And I'll use a real illustration, a robotic technician. They make about $65,000 a year on average. You can go into a 1 or 2 year program, come out and have an outstanding job that pays that. And if you think about it from the perspective of a person getting that position, they're not incurring significant debt like a 4 year degree would require. They're learning real skills they'll be able to tangibly use quickly. And then keep learning after that. It's not the end of learning. It's basically, though, you've got a great, well-paying job that, and you've got a credential that shows you can use that anywhere in our country. Build on that.
Are we looking at kind of a seismic shift in thinking back to skilled trades, like what Michigan was built on 100 years ago?
These things tend to go in cycles to some degree, and that's one of the areas, the professional trades, from electricians to plumbers, we have great demand for those. And so it really is, yeah, how do we get more tangible to help people get the needed skills as quickly as possible and thoughtfully as possible so they can be successful with a great career, and recognizing if you look at the future, it's going to be more about lifelong learning. So it's not just about the 18 to 22-year-old. It's the fact that many people coming out of school today will probably have to be retrained once or twice during their career. So how do we design a system of competency-based certificates that you can accumulate over a lifetime?
Obviously, this isn't going to be cheap. $100 million is what you're calling for the investment for. How are we going to be able to afford that with all the other needs that the state has, especially as you've driven, you know what the roads are like?
Yeah. And the good part is we're putting significantly more resources towards our roads. The good part is we've been very fiscally responsible over the last few years. And so we have resources on our balance sheet, essentially one-time money that's there from doing good refinancings on some prior debt that we can deploy for this program. And it'd be a five-year program, $100 million over those periods. And the payback is incredible. It essentially pays back within a year or so of, you know, these tens of thousands of people getting great paying jobs because they'll generate more tax revenue. They'll put us on a stronger path for our entire economy and help everyone.
Sure. And as you've looked at these careers that have openings, where do we see the biggest need? What parts of our economy need the most people right now?
Yeah, if you look at it, in manufacturing, we need more CNC operators and programmers. In information technology, we need more software programmers. They average $75,000 a year. In healthcare, we need more nurses and healthcare aides. And the professional trades, more plumbers, electricians. So it's in a variety of fields. So what we did is really try to isolate above average pay positions and fast growing positions and the intersection of those two. And that's what the focus is. How do we help people get a certificate where they can be successful in one of these great paying, fast growing fields?
Sure, and I want to switch topics here real quick. I know you were in Paw Paw very, very recently talking about Project Rising Tide. I'm not really familiar with that, so if you could maybe give us a little synopsis of what that is and what it means for Paw Paw and that part of Van Buren County.
Sure, and they did a great job. We just had graduation for them. So Rising Tide was a program. We said we've done a lot in our urban areas. Let's help our smaller communities be successful. So we bring in focused resources in economic development, talent development, community development, and help communities help themselves. And Paw Paw did a great job of that. They graduated. In fact, I'm doing a session today for the next town in the same region, which would be Albion. So we're doing 10 communities in the 10 different regions of the state.
And what other towns are next on that list? Yeah, Albion now and Paw Paw. Where else could we see this rolling out?
Well, a lot of communities are actually now asking to be part of the program, and that's exciting. So we've had in other parts of the state, we've had Charlotte, which was the original one. Now it's Eden Rapids. So we're seeing communities sort of step up to say they've heard about the program and they see success. And I asked communities that we've helped, Paw Paw, for example, they're going to help Albion. So after Albion, I'm sure we can find another well-deserving, interested community in your part of the state because there's so many wonderful places. Let's keep growing these small communities as well as our larger communities.
And in the last 9 months that you have in office, you know, bigger picture, a question here for you to close out. What are you viewing as the most significant challenge facing the state government?
It's really this talent question. Again, if you look at our economic growth, this is a problem if you talk to employers across our nation. They have positions open that are not being filled, often well-paying, high-demand fields. Let's make that connection happen because we can do that better than any place else in this country. And by doing that, it's going to make us an even more exciting economic engine for long-term growth, not just for the next 9 months, but for the next decade and longer.
Governor Rick Snyder joining us here on News Talk 94.9 WSJM.
Okay, that was Michael Arney, WSJM News' own Michael Arney, talking with Governor Rick Snyder about a couple of different issues, the Great Lakes and also his Marshall Plan for Michigan. The governor is aiming to spend the remainder of his time in office here increasing opportunities for skilled trades training here in Michigan. The governor says you can get yourself a good job with just a year or two in a skilled trades training program, and perhaps the state hasn't focused enough on that in years past. The governor would like to change that. He's hoping state lawmakers will be receptive to his message. News Talk 94.9 WSJM. This is Our Take. In just a minute, we'll take a break, and when we come back, we'll talk about the St. Joe City Commission. They met last night, did a few different things. We'll get into some of that next segment. Before we go to a break, though, I thought I would tell you about something Michigan News Network alerted us to today. 2 years ago this month, China terminated its data service with one of its space stations. And what that means is there's a dead Chinese space station floating around just outside of the Earth's atmosphere, and it is expected to crash into the Earth sometime in early April, and Michigan could be the place where it lands. Be sure to wear a helmet. Michael Narlock, the head of astronomy at the Cranbrook Institute of Science in Bloomfield Hills, tells us this 9-ton space station, this piece of space junk, expected to re-enter the Earth's atmosphere over southern Michigan between April 1st and April 3rd.
Most of it is going to burn up. It's got a couple solar panels. Those will burn up, and most of the structure of the space station will burn up as well. There might be some debris that makes it through the reentry process.
The space station is about the size of an RV, and its current trajectory suggests it'll land someplace along southern Michigan's latitude. That said, experts are trying to calm people down about this because they say your odds of actually being struck by a space station re-entering the atmosphere, you actually have better odds of winning the Powerball than that happening. And so this is Michael Narlock, head of astronomy at the Cranbrook Institute.
The chances of a person being struck by the debris is, I think the number I saw quoted is 1 in a trillion. You actually have a better chance of winning the Powerball than being struck by anything.
So that's Michael Narlock with the Cranbrook Institute telling us, yes, this dead space station may crash land in Michigan. No, you have no reason to be concerned. If anything, you might see a streak of light, but the odds of getting hit are extremely low. So it's nice to get this confirmed from the Cranbrook Institute over in Bloomfield Hills. I first heard about this over the weekend, but it was in an article that appeared in the Daily Mail. So I questioned the information. Seeing it in the Daily Mail also made me question the existence of space stations China and Michigan, but I've since verified those three things do actually exist despite having appeared in the Daily Mail. And in fact, this space station may land in Michigan sometime between April 1st and April 3rd. Watch the skies. You may see a streak of light as a result. News Talk 94.9 WSJM. This is Our Take. Right now, we'll take a break. When we come back, we will talk with a representative of the Krasl Art Center in St. Joe. Last night, St. Joe City Commissioners approved some improvement plans for the Krasl. We'll talk about a parks plan that City Commissioners discussed last night, as well as some changes to the World War I monument along the bluff. And then we'll check in with the Senior Center, the River Valley Senior Center, to find out about a large grant that they are receiving and what they plan to do with it. If you'd like to weigh in on something we discussed, send us an email. The address is ourtake@wsjam.com. That's O-U-R-T-A-K-E @wsjam.com. News Talk 94.9 WSJM. This is Our Take. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Oh yay, oh yay, oh yay!
We are excited to announce something new to the very popular app Town Crier Wire. Introducing Video News Wire. Now, not only can you read local stories that matter to you, you can now watch the top stories happening in Southwest Michigan. Our team of reporters hit the streets with video recording equipment, so when the big news happens, they are there to ask the questions and video record the events and upload them to the app. Then you can watch and see it for yourself.
Oh yay, oh yay, oh yay!
Video News Wire is a tab you'll find on the home screen inside the app. Click the tab and you'll see all of the video news stories available for you to watch at your convenience. This is unique to Southwest Michigan. There is nothing else like it. If you don't have the app yet, go to your mobile download store, type in Town Crier Wire, and press install. It's that easy. And again, it's free.
Oh yay, oh yay, oh yay. There's a new way to read and see your local news today. Just pick up your phone or your tablet too. Go to your store. It's easy to do.
Town Crier Wire?
Town Crier Wire.
Town Crier Wire.
News Talk 94.9 WSJM. This is Our Take. Thanks for tuning in to this Tuesday edition of the program. I am your host today. My name is Andrew Green. Glad to be with you. Right now, I thought I'd tell you a little bit about what St. Joe City Commissioners did last night. It was a long meeting. Now, first of all, they talked about a parks master plan that they have discussed at several other meetings. Last night, though, they actually approved this parks master plan. It concerns three parks around the city. That's Whirlpool Centennial Park, Riverview Park, and Dickinson Park. For the past year or so, the Department of Public Works has been working on this master plan, and the reason why they need a master plan for these parks is that it will allow the city to pursue grants for improvement projects Last night, city commissioners finally approved the plan, and they scheduled a March 26th public hearing to discuss seeking an actual grant, this one for a Whirlpool Centennial Park. I caught up about a month ago with the Deputy Public Works Director for the city, Greg Grothaus, to ask about what some of the things are in this park's master plan they've been working on. He was telling me, first of all, for Whirlpool Centennial Park, they have a few plans to add some features there that could make fountain maintenance a bit easier.
Some additional sidewalks with outdoor showers so people can basically rinse the sand off coming from the beach before they enter the fountain, so they're not using the fountain as that rinse off. Sand is a big issue we deal with operationally with the fountain, and that might help reduce some of those issues. And addition of shade structures.
Those shade structures were the biggest request from residents in various surveys the city did. Greg also noting they want to add a foot wash over there so people stop washing sand off their feet in the fountain, creating a major maintenance headache for the city staff. So that's the first park that's going to be discussed at a March 26th public hearing as city commissioners consider actually seeking state grants to get some of this work done. The other two parks, Dickinson and Riverview. For Dickinson, they were talking about adding a playground and some fences. There's ongoing discussions about a possible small pavilion over there with a few picnic tables in it. And then for Riverview Park, Greg said the big priority is improving or even replacing the Briarwood structure they have over there. That's the sort of pavilion area at Riverview Park where events are held. He told me a few weeks ago the structure is not in the best shape right now.
It's a log structure, and time has just not been great. You know, it's right there on the river. It's an area that floods occasionally. Some of those timbers are just, they're starting to rot.
So that's one priority. However, recent flooding at Riverview Park did cause some commissioners to express concerns about proceeding with any expensive development for that park, wondering if maybe flooding will now be a regular thing. Greg said the flooding that they had there wasn't as bad as it could have been. And indeed, it was essentially historic flooding there. So that's the Parks Master Plan, finally approved last night. Some residents still have disagreements about aspects of the Dickinson Park work, but they'll work that out later. Also last night, city commissioners approved some improvements for the Krazzle Art Center. Krazzle recently announced an ambitious program to improve its grounds to make the place more welcoming, and city commissioners gave the green light to it last night. There was some controversy about Krazzle's idea for renting the space out for events like weddings and graduation parties, things like that, bar mitzvahs and what have you. And so in the end, Mayor Mike Gary suggested that they put a 2-per-month limit on those events for a 2-year probationary period with yearly review by the city. So as far as letting people rent out part of the grounds at Krazzle, that's sort of being limited for now. But anyway, I caught up with Krazzle Art Center's Julia Gorley last night to ask about some of the plans they have to improve the grounds. Let's hear what she had to tell me.
Yeah, we've been hard at work for the last 5 years or so with the intention to commission a new sculpture for the Krazzle Art Center's grounds to make it a more attracting and appealing destination and place for people to gather and make memories. And that sculpture commission has snowballed into a really exciting grounds development project. It happened to coincide with the acquisition of a couple properties that allow us to own the block. So we are now, we've just received support for our planned unit development for the grounds, and it will include activating the space and making it a really great place for people to gather and connect and make memories.
If you had to fire off a quick list.
That's Julia Gorley, Krazzle Art Center. I asked her what they're adding.
Sure. As I shared, we'll be commissioning a new sculpture by Richard Hunt, a site-specific sculpture that forms kind of a gateway to the downtown and the cultural corridor. We'll also have a gathering space, a flat kind of amphitheater kind of space where people could potentially gather and have informal little skits or performances. There will be hopefully a fire feature close to the Krazzle Art Center's front doors so people can gather year-round. Obviously, it'll be safe and secure, but people can gather in the winter months, in addition to an informal seating area, so you could grab a friend and meet them at the Krazzle Art Center and have a sandwich on the grounds or recharge your computer or get your business work done during the beautiful summer season. And in addition, all of this is developed with a real strong integrity to the cultural arts and sculpture placement, as well as being a universal access designed site. So it's intentionally accessible to people regardless of their mobility.
Next, I asked Julie why Krazzle felt it was time to make these changes.
Gosh, we're so lucky to sit in this beautiful spot on Lake Boulevard and across the street from Lake Bluff Park, and we just don't have enough people hanging out on those beautiful grounds. So we saw it as an opportunity to take our mission outdoors and make it accessible to people on our grounds 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, in a barrier-free capacity. We know some people are a little intimidated to come into a museum, so taking our mission outdoors kind of lowers that barrier and invites them to come in regardless of what they're wearing or how they're ready to engage with the arts.
Of course, the big issue is the events they plan to hold there. I asked Julie what sort of events.
Sure. We simply want to have the ability to offer event rentals should individuals come to us and say, hey, I'd really like to have my child's graduation party at the Krazel Art Center. They're an art student and there's nowhere that they would rather be than at the Krazel Art Center to celebrate their graduation. And now we can say yes to that.
Anything else you want to add?
No, we really appreciate the dialogue amongst the neighborhood and the community. It's important. We're all in the community development together. And, you know, there are often different sides to every story. And we truly appreciate the conversation. So we're thrilled that everyone is here tonight and that we've gotten the support of the commission.
Okay, that was Julia Gorley, Executive Director of the Krazel Art Center in St. Joseph. Last night, City Commissioners approved some upgrades to the grounds at Krazel. They want to make the place more welcoming to people, just so people will feel free to walk out there and just kind of hang around at the Krazel Art Center. They want it to be a community draw for everyone because, as Julia noted, art museums can be a little intimidating. So those changes approved last night by the City Commission. The events they plan to hold there limited for now by the City Commission, and they will be reviewed yearly, at least for the next 2 years. Julie told me the time frame there is they hope to break ground on some of this work in May and actually be done in October. So they're ready and rearing to go. That's one of the things the City Commission did last night. Also last night, City Commissioners approved some changes to the World War I monument on the Bluff. They called it the Doughboy. There's a statue there of a soldier, World War I soldier. Last night, they approved moving a plaque. There's a plaque on that monument listing soldiers from the St. Joe area who were killed in World War I. Last night, the City Commission approved moving that plaque to a more prominent space, sort of more in front of the Doughboy as opposed to behind it. And they also approved adding a flagpole and an American flag there. And so that was those were the main three things that St. Joe City Commissioners did last night. News Talk 94.9 WSJM, this is Our Take. And right now, I thought we'd welcome our next guest of the program, and that is Tim Hawkins. He is the manager of the River Valley Senior Center, which is located in Sawyer. They recently got word they're going to receive a $100,000 grant from the Pokagon Fund for some improvements there. I caught up with the manager, Tim Hawkins. Let's hear about what they've got planned at the River Valley Senior Center. Okay, Tim, River Valley Senior Center receiving a grant from the Pokagon Fund. Tell us more about it.
The River Valley Senior Center is in the middle of a renovation. It's going to be about a $450,000 total renovation, and we're doing it in three phases. Phase one is complete and paid for out of River Valley Senior Center funds. Phase two, we definitely needed some funding to help us. And we applied for a grant to the Pokagon Fund. And the Pokagon Fund looked at it favorably and awarded us a grant of $100,000. Phase two will cost us $165,000. And this now paves our way to pay for phase two without incurring any debt. So we're really, really happy for where we're at right now.
Okay, so what sort of work are you doing there as part of this improvement phase?
Well, it's actually renovating of the nurse's office, another activity or meeting room, two ADA restrooms, and the office area. And then we have a great room that we use for activities also. And that'll be phase two.
So that's phase two of a three-phase project. What do the other phases entail?
The first phase was the outside, the front, an ADA accessible entryway, and the library computer room, and a all-purpose room that we can use for presentation and meetings. That was phase one. And then phase two is what I just described. Phase three is our lower level, which is one large room, and it'll be done probably starting in July.
Right, and you were telling me earlier you've never done anything quite like this before at the River Valley Senior Center. This is sort of the biggest renovation you've experienced.
The River Valley Senior Center was located in a doctor's office that was built in the 1950s, and it still looked like a doctor's office with little plywood walls and restrooms off of offices. And this has given it a whole different look and making it a much more usable facility for the seniors.
Okay, about how many seniors come to the center on a given day?
Well, we have probably a turnstile count of about, 1,200 a month.
Okay.
I'm trying to think. I'm thinking off the top of my hat, but I think we had 14,000 last year. And that's a turnstile count. You know, some of them are the same people coming back for exercises every other day or whatever.
So while this renovation work is going on, how have your operations been affected?
Well, we're just kind of, it's like squeezing a balloon. We kind of moving over in this corner and let them work on that, on another corner, and that's what they're doing right now. We're kind of in the part they renovated and using it as offices and not what we really designed it for, and then they'll build on that side. And by, well, they said 90 to 100 days, we'll have the complete phase two done. So we'll be in good shape then.
All right, so a $100,000 grant from the Pokagon Fund. Is this the first time you've worked with them?
They have helped us. They helped us buy a van a few years ago. They helped with our lower driveway. We asphalted our lower level driveway, and they paid about a third of that. And they've been good friends at the senior center, I can say that.
Great, great. Well, yeah, $100,000. It's a pretty big contribution.
We were giving everybody hugs and dancing around here for a day.
We're talking with Tim Hawkins, the manager of the River Valley Senior Center. It's in actually Harbert. They recently got word of a $100,000 grant they're receiving from the Pokagon Fund as part of a renovation project. Three phases. Tim, you said this grant pays for phase two. How about phase three?
Phase three is not financed at this point. We have some money towards it, but we're going to continue to raise funds, and we do have a line of credit from the bank. So we're continuing to solicit funds for anybody that does want to donate.
All right, Tim, anything else you'd like to add about the renovations you've got going on there or the grant from the Pokagon Fund?
No, we're just proud that the Pokagon's looked at our application favorably, and it definitely paved the way to us to get phase two done.
All right, that was Tim Hawkins, manager, River Valley Senior Center. They are receiving a $100,000 grant from the Pokagon Fund. The Pokagon Fund, of course, is a fund that was set up when the Four Winds Casino opened. Pokagon Fund receives a very small percentage of Four Winds Casino slot revenues and then it gives that money away to community projects around southern Berrien County areas near the Four Winds Casino. It's handed out millions of dollars in the last 10 years to all sorts of organizations, and now that's $100,000 right there for the River Valley Senior Center. The work is ongoing. News Talk 94.9 WSJM. This is Our Take, and it's time for a break. When we come back, we will talk with the Exchange Club of Southwest Michigan's Jim Ashbrook about a program that they are holding this year as part of the Senior PGA Championship. They did this at the last Senior PGA as well, where anyone in Southwest Michigan can sponsor an American flag that will be on display, and then that money will go to Lest We Forget. We'll find out more about how that will work with the Exchange Club's Jim Ashbrook. Coming up next segment, News Talk 94.9 WSJM. This is Our Take. Stick around. We'll be right back. News Talk 94.9 WSJM. This is Our Take. Thanks for tuning in to this Tuesday edition of the program. I am the host today. My name is Andrew Green. Glad to be with you. This is, of course, the show where we have longer conversations about things you may have heard about recently on WSJM News. If it's come up in our news coverage, it will come up on Our Take, but in a more extended fashion. We have longer conversations with folks in the know or making things happen in Michigan's Great Southwest or in our fair state of Michigan. Speaking of which, we heard from Governor Rick Snyder today. He chatted with us about his Marshall Plan for the state to increase opportunities for skilled trades training throughout the next year. We also learned what St. Joe City Commissioners did last night. We had a brief conversation with the Kresel Art Center's Julia Gorley about some of the work they have planned there. The City Commission gave it the green light last night. And we also heard from the manager of the River Valley Senior Center about some renovations they've got going on there with the help of the Pokagon Fund. Right now, to close out today's program, I thought we would tell you about something you can do at the Senior PGA Championship this year. Senior PGA is coming up quickly. It's in May. And while this event is going on, you can sponsor an American flag that will be on display while the event is underway over at Harbor Shores. This program is being run by Lest We Forget and the Exchange Club of Southwest Michigan. I caught up with the Exchange Club's Jim Ashbrook to find out more. So let's hear what he had to tell me. Okay, Jim, so Senior PGA Championship coming up quickly here in Benton Harbor, and the Exchange Club and Lest We Forget, you've teamed up with this program to honor veterans. Tell us a little more.
Absolutely. This would be our biennial flag field. We did one 2 years ago in 2016, and the SBA has asked us to come back and do another field this year. It's a special treat to be able to do that for the PGA.
All right, great. So you did this at the last event. This time around, the PGA has actually invited you.
Oh, they invited us to come back and do another one.
Yeah.
They invited us the first time, too.
Yeah. Oh, okay. So it sounds like it must have gone pretty well.
Yeah, it did. It went really well, we had a 300 flag field out at the 7, 8, and 9 holes at Gene Clark Park.
Okay, so with the last Senior PGA, you displayed 300 flags. Is it going to be the exact same thing this year?
No, so this year it's going to be a little different. The flag field is going to be at the bus stop where the MTech Whirlpool building is, just off of the Clock Road, mm-hmm. and it'll be just north of hole 1. As you go over the creek there.
So will you be able to see the flag field from the road?
Anybody driving by will be able to see it. Yeah, especially if you're going west. It's a little harder to see it if you're going east, but from going west, it'll be real easy to see. And there'll be another part of the field, too. It's really important, and that is 30 flags where the spectators' entrance is to the event. Mm-hmm. 30 flags, the same area we had 2 years ago. But these are a little special. I want to dedicate these flags to all veterans by organizations, businesses, or churches, not individuals, in the area to show that the community is 100% behind this.
All right, so you'll have the field at MTech with about 230 or so flags, and then you'll have this other one near Harbor Shores that businesses, organizations can sponsor?
A business organization, for example, the Exchange Club will sponsor one. We've asked the other organizations in the area to also sponsor Kiwanis, Lions, Rotary, et cetera, and any other organization. We don't really care who the organization is. We just want organizations behind it so that when spectators come in, they'll know the community is behind this flag field.
Great, great. So, and yeah, I see you got a website here, healingfield.org/Benton Harbor 18. Is that where someone goes to sponsor?
That is correct. You can go on there and purchase a flag on that. You can contact me here at Taylor Rental in M139 and any Lest We Forget member or Exchange Club member that you might know.
All right, it looks like if you want to sponsor a flag, it's $50.
A $50 sponsor is an individual flag, and that would be if you were going to get one, say, an uncle that served or a father that served in that particular area. As far as the ones on the Avenue, they're a little special. They're a premium price at $75, mm-hmm. But they're going to be where everybody can see them. Where they walk in the place, they're going to see them all.
All right, that was Jim Ashbrook with the Exchange Club of Southwest Michigan at the Senior PGA Championship this year. An individual or an organization can sponsor an American flag that they'll have on display, a field of about 230 of them out in front of the MTech Center there, or there will be a smaller field of flags also by the Harbor Shores entrance. The one-year Harbor Shores entrance will be $75 to sponsor a flag, and that's for organizations. The field of honor over at the MTech Center will be for individuals to sponsor for $50. All the money raised goes to Lest We Forget, and of course, it's a great way to honor a veteran. We have a link at WSJM.com to the page where you go to reserve one of these flags. It's healingfield.org/Benton Harbor 18. You can Google WSJM Jim Ashbrook, and that ought to pull it up. And you can reserve one of these flags now. It raises money for a fine organization, which is Lest We Forget, and it also helps salute veterans, and that'll be another feature of this year's Senior PGA Championship at Harbor Shores. News Talk 94.9 WSJM. I have one last thing to tell you about before we wrap up today's edition of The Hour Take. The results are in. As of last night, we have our Miss Blossom time. We have this from the exciting announcement last night.
Reigning over the 112th Blossom Time Festival for 2018. Our 86th Miss Blossom Time is Riley Ellis, Miss Stevensville.
All right, that's Riley Ellis, Miss Stevensville, crowned Miss Blossom Time last night. It's an annual tradition here in Southwest Michigan. Miss Ellis there crowned last night in Benton Township. Jamie Tidy of Eau Claire is the first runner-up. Micah Sachs of Coloma is the second runner-up. And Olivia Zimmer of Hartford is our Miss Congeniality for the year. Now, on Sunday night, they crowned Mr. Blossom Time. It was Garrett Brandt of Hartford. Demyron Guidry of Benton Harbor was the first runner-up. Daniel Akonski of St. Joe, second runner-up. And Ben O'Donnell of New Buffalo was Mr. Nice Guy. The whole gang gets to a ride in the annual Blossom Time Parade set for this spring. So there you go. We have our Miss Blossom Time. It is Miss Stevensville, Riley Ellis. We congratulate her on her victory last night in Benton Township. News Talk 94.9 WSJM. That does it for today's edition of Our Take. Coming up on tomorrow's show, we'll talk with the Berrien County Health Department about emergency preparedness. We'll also hear what the Humane Society is doing right now. They recently received a $700,000 challenge grant. We'll learn about that on tomorrow's Our Take. And we'll talk with Indiana Michigan Power about a new program they've brought to Southwest Michigan that could help you reduce your energy bill. If you'd like to weigh in on something we discuss, send us an email. The address is ourtake@wsjm.com. That's O-U-R-T-A-K-E at wsjm.com. News Talk 94.9 WSJM. That does it for another edition of Our Take. You have a fantastic rest of your day.
Oh yay, oh yay, oh yay.
We are excited to announce something new to the very popular app Town Crier Wire. Introducing Video News Wire. Now, not only can you read local stories that matter to you, you can now watch the top stories happening in Southwest Michigan. Our team of reporters hit the streets with video recording equipment. So when the big news happens, they are there to ask the questions and video record the events and upload them to the app. Then you can watch and see it for yourself.
Oh yay, oh yay, oh yay.
Video News Wire is a tab you'll find on the home screen inside the app. Click the tab and you'll see all of the video news stories available for you to watch at your convenience. This is unique to Southwest Michigan. There is nothing else like it. If you don't have the app yet, go to your mobile download store, type in Town Crier Wire, and press install. It's that easy. And again, it's free.
Oh yay, oh yay, oh yay. There's a new way to read and see your local news today. Just pick up your phone or your tablet too. Go to your store. It's easy to do.
Town Crier Wire?
Town Crier Wire.
Town Crier Wire.